listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
The old lady is beaten. But don't worry, we're not promoting domestic violence here on World Football Daily. But Fiorentina get a 4-2 smashing at home against Juventus. Big night for Antonio Conte's men. There's controversy in Germany as Bayern Leverkusen's ghost goal shocks not just the Bundesliga, but the entire footballing world. And it's problems for Manchester United. A draw at home to Southampton. Would this have happened under Sir Alex Ferguson? We'll talk about all that and more on today's World Football Daily. Welcome to the show. I am Oliver, the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the views from around the world of football. Joining me later on, of course, will be, as always, Rafa Gonzalez. It was an absolutely manic week. A weekend, should I say. I mean, it's only going to get busier. We've got Champions League football coming up this week. Delighted to get that back underway. We have come out of the international break flying this week, but the stories coming out of this weekend, absolutely balmy, both on and off the pitch. Off the pitch, it's Roy Hodgson's race row continues to baffle us all of what is going to happen in this situation. The FA saying there should be an inquest and they will have an inquest. In the meantime, Greg Dyke, the new chairman of the FA, has got his executive committee ready, the committee that are going to apparently rejuvenate English men's football, the men's national team, here in the UK. The initial eight names were read out last week, all of them Caucasian males, which was a big, maybe not a big shock, but it was something that was very much picked up on towards the end of last week here in the UK. Another two names have been added to that list of the 10-man committee. Those names are Roy Hodgson's and Rio Ferdinand's. Plenty of questions now if are being asked about whether Rio Ferdinand was brought in to be a non-Caucasian male on the committee, or whether he was genuinely always going to be on that committee anyway. But it was always seemed peculiar that Greg Dyke would release those first eight names first and then add these other two as well. It's a bizarre situation. We're still kind of siding, I think, here on World Football Daily with the fact that Roy Hodgson wasn't being racist and isn't being racist in what happened in that halftime team talk for England last Tuesday in Wembley. And talking of that Wembley game, there's plenty to be discussed as well about flares in football grounds. Tottenham against Aston Villa up at Villa Park. Unfortunately, I wasn't there to see it, but I have seen the incident, watching it on telly, and a smoke bomb, if you will, thrown at the referee's assistant. I mean, can't be tolerated, but we do love flares in football. We'll be getting into that a little bit as well. Going through the list of results from the weekend, though, if you've missed the goals, there are some incredible goals out there. Just watch PSG's 4-0 win over Bastia. We also have Major League Soccer playoff spots booked for the majority now of the Western Conference. The Portland Timbers, the Real Salt Lake, LA Galaxy, and the Seattle Sounders booking their places in the playoffs. Colorado Rapids still yet to book their place, but looks as though they should be able to. San Jose Earthquakes, the goal difference seems insurmountable. It's going to be tough for them to get past the Rapids. Those four teams, though, have got their place in the playoffs. In the other one, in the Eastern Conference, Sporting SKC booking their place alongside the New York Red Bulls, who are just flying at the moment, absolutely flying, as they race towards the Supporters' Shield. Now, we thought it was going to be Seattle's all along. I know Rafa's going to come on and tell me that Seattle are being soft. There's news all over the place. We're going to try and get into it as much as we can this week, as we also build up the Champions League football. It's going to be a really busy week here on WFD, and I'm delighted to say that we have two guests for today on our show to join us and talk about some of the opinions from the weekend. A little later on, we're going to be joined by the voice of Talk Sports football commentary. He's a man who I have to say I do look up to, and we always enjoy having him on the show. It's been a very long time since we had him on. Mr. Sam Matterface is going to be on World Football Daily a little later on. But joining us first is a woman to take us through yet more disasters, I guess, for El Tri south of the border. That's right. Mexico have once again changed their manager. We're going to talk about whether this is the right decision or whether it's going to be another disaster as they get set to take on New Zealand in the playoffs. We'll also have the European playoffs, by the way, the draw taking place as we do this show. We will give you the results to that a little later on. But as I say, joining us today to talk a little bit about El Tri once again, and to enlighten us about what's going to happen for Mexican and the national Mexico and the national team, is a woman who we had our first guest. Or our first appearance, sorry, was on the show just a week or so ago. And she's back again to give us another El Tri update. Yes, joining us from Los Angeles, California. It's the lovely Kim Tate. Kim, pleasure to have you back on the show. How have you been since your debut appearance?
No, not at all.
Excellent.
You're good at settling the nerves, Oliver.
Thank you very much. Look, we need to talk about El Tri because, although it happened last week, the stories around the Mexican national team in general over the last few months have continued to baffle us here on World Football Daily. Now, the job was done. It wasn't done stylishly, but you have to say the games against Panama, against Costa Rica, they got the results that were needed to get through with a little bit of help from the US men's national team. First, that Panama game, that was a huge win for Vukotic, and everything seemed great with the stunning winner from Jimenez. It was an insane game to watch.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were some marked improvements from that game. I don't know. I saw some areas where they were still a little bit shaky, but all in all, it was an improvement. You know, of course, Oribe Peralta comes through for us, or for El Tri. Huge in the first half and scored that goal. Who, I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Oribe Peralta has been the saving grace of this team. He scored 5 of their 7 goals. You know, he's just been absolutely stellar. I think for me, if it wasn't for Oribe, they wouldn't even have gotten this far. So he was good. You know, I thought that Javier Aquino had some okay moments, but he wasn't really getting the job done for me. Even Gio Dos Santos seemed to be a little bit disconnected. You know, there was that question of whether or not Oribe Peralta and Javier Hernandez, Chicharito, would be able to play together up top. And it seemed like they were doing okay, but, you know, there were other moments where they didn't really seem to still connect. I don't really think you're going to get those two to connect over two games, personally. You know, but they still have some work to do. I think, I can't remember if it was with you or another show where I said that was a very intelligent sub, in my opinion, by Vucetich, by putting on Tijuana's Fernando Arce for Gio Dos Santos. And, you know, just minutes after he subs him on, he feeds the pass to Jimenez and boom, he scored that wonderful chilena for El Tri and got the job done. And what a moment that was. I mean, I think the greatest thing about that goal was that so many people didn't really expect it. I know I sure didn't. Mm. And you know, if you pay attention to the embrace of that team after that goal, you know, it seemed as though whatever rift may have existed between those players was somehow just completely eliminated. You know, brought tears of joy to fans in the stands and gave everybody some hope. So you went into the second game against Costa Rica thinking, you know, oh gosh, you know, maybe this is a confidence booster. Maybe this is a change of pace for Mexico going forward. But You know, that second game against Costa Rica was just, for me, it was almost disastrous. You know, defensively, they couldn't really get it together. Thanks to Oribe Peralta, you know, they did find themselves on the board, but, you know, they didn't really get the job done, like you said. I mean, the saving grace for them was Graham Zusi and Aaron Johansson for USA.
Unbelievable watching that US men's national team game against Panama and what it did to help Mexico as well. I mean, were you surprised?
What a night of drama in CONCACAF. That, for me, that's like a night to remember for years and years and years. You're going to look back on that 20 years from now and be like, oh, remember that one night in CONCACAF when the US saved
I think the U.S. men's national team will be hoping that it doesn't come to bite them back at the World Cup next summer. It would be ironic if Mexico were to put the United States out in maybe the knockout stages. We went out of that Costa Rica game looking at Mexico thinking they've just got by, but they've got by. They've got into the playoff now against New Zealand. You said yourself just then that Vukotić made that substitution against Panama that really changed the game. Seemed intelligent, especially after that Panama game. Everything goes well, and suddenly Vukotić is straight out the door. Are you surprised with how hard a line the Mexican Football Association have taken with him, considering that he got them there to the playoff stage, which is what they were asking him to do? It wasn't conventional, but he did get that job done.
Well, I mean, I was surprised, yeah, but you know, the team was still in shambles, and I think that was pretty obvious. You know, those two games, yeah, they got the job done, but still, the team is a mess. I mean, the thing is Mexico don't really have time to get acclimated to a new system of doing things or a new coach. You know, like, you know, if they maybe had six or seven or, you know, the entire hexagonal to go, I could see them keeping Vucetich because they can afford to lose or draw one or two games here and there, but you know, they're in a situation where it's like, we have to win. Like, they absolutely have to win. There's no margin for error. And they need immediate results. And I guess the Federation and its committee think that Miguel Herrera, the Club America coach, is the man. I mean, he's doing very well with his club team right now. They sit at the top of the Liga MX table, 10 wins, 2 draws, only 1 loss. He hasn't had nearly the kind of decorated career that Vucetich has had. But, you know, with America having a system that works right now, I think the FMF are in panic mode, so knowing that an L3 squad led by a predominantly America system or a based team might be their saving grace. The decision was voted unanimously by their development committee, which I think includes 8 of 12 Mexican League club owners. And when they had that emergency meeting last Friday, they voted on it unanimously, and they kind of decided, well, this is the best decision for Mexico going forward, especially in this crucial playoff campaign. So Mexico will get Herrera, or El Piojo, as they call him, which is Spanish for Laos, for those who didn't know.
Thank you. Thanks for that. My Spanish isn't up to scratch, I have to say.
They get his technical staff, and I guess we'll see if his success in Liga MX, his apertura, can translate to country as well.
And I mean, I guess if he doesn't get the job done in the first leg against New Zealand, are we likely to see him lose his job for the second leg? Or I mean, are we going to have more changes, or will they stick with Herrera, lose, win, or draw against New Zealand in the playoff games?
I'll tell you, if they make another change, if Mexico don't get the job done at the Azteca in the first leg against New Zealand, I'm going AWOL from life. That would be something, wouldn't it? No, I think they'll stick with him. I think they will. And I'm confident that he can get the job done. I don't know if you saw the full squad that he just named last night, but he did come out with his squad to be named against New Zealand. He's got 10 players from America on there. Munoz, who's the second goalkeeper behind Jesus Corona from Cruz Azul. You've got five defenders, 3 midfielders, and then of course you've got Raul Jimenez, who scored that wonder goal. He also called in Aldo Negris, who used to play for him in Monterrey. He's now with Chivas de Guadalajara, but we saw him pair up really well with Di Suazo when they played for Monterrey in CONCACAF Champions League. In both years that they made it to the final and won, and then made it to the Club World Cup and got third. So, you know, he's playing with a squad that he's very familiar with. They're used to his coaching style, obviously the technical staff style. So, you know, I think that he can get the job done. Zealand is not one to be taken lightly either. I mean, when you look at their squad, you know, they've got a lot of, I think they have some depth. They've got a lot of power. They're defensively a pretty stacked team. They're a very physical team. So, you know, they're competing for a spot just as much as Mexico is. So for me, it's going to be interesting to see the matchup and see how those two play against each other.
It's going to be an enthralling tie in mid-November between Mexico and New Zealand. And of course, New Zealand used to shocking people as they shocked the Italians in the World Cup not so long ago. Kim, an absolute pleasure as always to get a little heads up on El Tri and just where they're going. I hope for the Mexican national team's sake that we don't have you back too soon, just so we're talking not about managerial changes and the disaster that is Mexico at the moment in time. But it would be a pleasure to get you back on the show as soon as possible, Kim.
Absolutely, anytime. Thanks Cheers. For having me.
Thanks so much. Kim Tate joining us here on World Football Daily, giving us her thoughts on El Tri and the disaster that has been Vukotic's appointment. I don't know if it's disastrous or not. The Mexican FA had this very kind of strong statement of, let's remind you, Vukotic didn't get the job done. The US men's national team got the job done for us. And I think they are very frustrated and bitter by that fact that it was down to the US men's national team that got them to the World Cup and not their own play, and it wasn't done in their own hands. Whether that's enough, though, I mean, Vukotic, you think about the side that he inherited, it's from Chepo de la Torre. It was a side that wasn't playing well, was going nowhere at that point anyway. So to come in for a small spell of a month and to be expected to turn a national team round at the flicker of a switch, it's always going to be difficult. Really was a tough ask. Vukotic, though, losing his job last week. And as Kim said, the expected man to come in and take the place, Miguel Herrera, Club America coach, won the Apertura last season and in 2013, and about to predictably, or possibly even, win another one as well in Mexico. So he's got a winning record at the moment. He's obviously used to playing in the Azteca as well. We were talking about that last week. The fact that he is used to that environment might be useful for them. And as Kim said, they're loaning in the back staff as well into the El Tri national team. Very odd indeed goings on with the Mexican national football team. We will look and keep an eye on it as always and watch it continue throughout the next few months or so, the next month or so, as we get ready for that game, those playoff games against New Zealand on the 13th of November and the 20th of November. Always absolutely stellar to talk El Tri with Kim. We have another guest on our way here on the show, and joining me now to get back to European football, let's get back to the basics, let's get back to the motherland, let's get back to England, back to Premier League football. It was an unbelievable weekend in the Barclays Premier League. Everything went right for the top sides, aside from Liverpool, who struggled. That 10-man Newcastle holding out against the SAS, as they're called now, Suarez and Sturridge. Liverpool couldn't break them down in that second half, over 45 minutes with the additional man, and still couldn't find a winner. Newcastle actually taking the lead in that second half before Daniel Sturridge's header. He keeps on scoring, doesn't he? Pulled that Liverpool side level. Brendan Rodgers very disappointed about that. But we've got to talk about Manchester United. And a man who's joining us here to do so is obviously a very, very prominent sports journalist in the UK. He is the voice of all things TalkSport, the partner of Stan Collymore on TalkSport's football commentary. And he is one of the top voices on British radio for talking football, of course. It's TalkSport's very own Mr. Sam Matterface joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Premier League. Sam, how you doing, mate? It's been far too long since we last had you on the show, man. How are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. It was great to get back to Barclays Premier League football once again, and it was a cracking weekend of football where almost all the top sides managed to pull off the results they wanted, except for Manchester United. They still continue to struggle. How much of this should we be looking to blame on Moyes? How much of it are we looking at just a United side that maybe overstretched last season and actually coming into this year just isn't that great a squad?
Well, I think, you know, everyone's always going to look for someone to blame. I mean, turning around and saying that we should blame David Moyes seems a bit odd. My view on it really is that ask yourself this question: how many of members of the squad have changed from last season? How many have left from last season? And the answer to that is none. Not many, apart from Paul Scholes, who's retired. And then say to yourself, okay, well, if you've got the same group of players and you've only added to it with Fellaini, why are you not competing like you were last season? Well, there's two reasons for that. It's a better league than it was last season. It's a more competitive league than it was last season. Especially the mid-range teams are performing a lot better than they were last campaign. And the other reason is because the Manchester United players, and there are some exceptions, aren't playing as well as they should do. I think they do lack a little bit of tempo in midfield. I think they do lack a little bit of hunger. I know that the training methods haven't gone down great with some. But the truth is that David Moyes is the manager of Manchester United now, and he does it his way. And if we're serious about it, he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. There'll be five or six, seven, maybe even eight Manchester United players who end up getting moved on before he does. The fact of the matter is that at the moment, there are players that are wearing that shirt that aren't playing as well as they could be. There are some players in the team that shouldn't be in the team. I'm not convinced about Fellaini, but then again, I'm not sure that David Moyes is playing him in his right position or hasn't got nailed down a position for him yet. And it is a team very much in transition. I think that's worth sort of highlighting. You know, when a new regime comes in, a new management regime comes in, a new player, a new manager, whoever it is, it takes time for both the manager and for the players to adjust to that. They've been used to doing everything a certain way under Sir Alex Ferguson for a very, very long time. If you thought that David Moyes was going to walk in there and win the league by 20 points, then you need your head read. So anyone who thought that it was going to be a seamless transition was always going to be let down. It's always going to be difficult. There's no secret that was going to be the case. David Moyes knew that. Sir Alex Ferguson knew that, which is why he gave that speech on the pitch at the end of last season.
Sam, what have you made of the emergence of Januzaj for Manchester United in the last few weeks? Obviously got that brace against Sunderland, and there's been a lot of talk about him in the press. Do you get the feeling they've offered him, given him this new contract extension and a bigger wage package, do you get the feeling that he is going to be the real deal for Manchester United? Or is it maybe a little bit of a reaction response and maybe a little bit too quick to judge just yet?
I think that he's performed excellently when called upon. I was lucky enough to be at his Premier League debut, his first start in the Premier League at the Stadium of Light, and he was absolutely excellent. He rescued Manchester United that day. He's got skill, he's got guard, he's got strength, he can hold the ball up, he can create, he can play the number 10 role, he can play on the flanks. He's got a bright future. If he keeps his head switched on and he keeps being well advised, and at the moment I think the common consensus is that he is being well advised, then he has got a great future ahead of him. Obviously, you can never tell what's going to happen in 5-10 years, how many injuries he sustained, how he gets on playing at the club, you know, whether or not he's going to be a world beater or not. But he very much looks as if he's got all the attributes to be a very, very good player in the future. The contract situation has been rumbling on for some while. I mean, Manchester United have wanted to tie this kid down for ages. If you've been at Manchester United over the last 5 years, they've been talking about, well, 5 years, 3 years, they've been talking about this kid has won for the future. This is a guy you should be keeping an eye on. There were other clubs interested in him. I don't think there's any secret about that. He's been pretty clear that his loyalty stays with Manchester United. He's been there for a couple of seasons now. He's worked very well in their academy setup, and there is a big, you know, there's a huge belief in him there. I think David Moyes looked at him and thought, you know what? You offer me an option in different positions, and I like that. There's creativity there. There's flair there. There's work rate there. There's hunger and desire, and that's what you need. When I was talking about players that weren't doing that earlier on, you know, he's come in and taken the place of those people. And I think he's right to be viewed as a prospect, someone that we can get excited about, and hopefully someone who will deliver over the course of the season. Stark contrast, really, to a young English player who was brought into Manchester United from Crystal Palace in Wilfried Zaha, who since the Charity Shield hasn't had a kick. And that's very, very, very disappointing. Now, I'm obviously not privy to the reasons for that, and I'm sure most people aren't either. But whether or not David Moyes just doesn't fancy him, he doesn't fit into the system, or he doesn't think he's ready to play for Manchester United, I mean, it's a real shame. It's a real shame because this is a player who we saw last season play excellently for Crystal Palace, but also, you know, we've seen him play for the under-21s and do very well. And I actually thought that on his Manchester United debut in the Community Shield, he looked as if he was going to be part of the first team squad, a regular part of the first team squad. He looked to me as if he had one trick too many, maybe tried a little bit too much to impress, but had the ability, certainly, to make an impact on this team. And when you think of the other wingers that they've got, Ashley Young and Nani, who flit in and flit out. I mean, Ashley Young, really, I haven't been impressed with him since he's joined Manchester United. And Nani, well, he'll have 10 good games, 10 bad ones, usually not in succession. So that is interesting and frustrating from an English point of view that Wilfried Zaha hasn't had a look in. But maybe he'll need a little bit more time to, again, you know, manage to sort of acclimatise to the Manchester United ways.
Now, Sam, later on this week, of course, we've got Champions League action that United are involved in, but there's something happening off the pitch that might affect United as well. Sir Alex Ferguson's new book being launched. Do you think there is going to be an impact on the club and the feelings around the club? I know Wayne Rooney said that he thinks it could be detrimental to how the fans view him. Do you think there will be an impact and a fallout from Sir Alex Ferguson's book?
Oh, it's tough, isn't it, really? Get on with it. I mean, at the end of the day, if he does decide to spill the beans, I don't actually think he's going to go too harshly on anyone, because I think that if he does that to people that are still in the club, then he's got, you know, the power to destabilise what is a unit and an institution that he holds dear to his heart. So I don't think he would actually go that far. I mean, he might upset Rooney a little bit, but tough, get on with it, you know. Are you not allowed to upset anybody anymore by giving your opinion on how they've behaved or how they've, you know, conducted themselves? If Sir Alex Ferguson isn't happy because Wayne Rooney charged into his office and said, I don't want to play midfield anymore and I want to transfer, I want to get out of here, you know, and Ferguson's upset by that or frustrated by that because he feels that he's already given in to Rooney previously when Rooney was throwing a strop and threatening to go to Manchester City. Although, let's be honest, you know, how much Wayne Rooney has to do with these situations, I don't know. How much his agent is involved in it is another matter, you know, completely. It seems pretty clear from everything that we heard over the summer that someone in the Rooney camp, whether it be Rooney or one of his agents or one of his agent's associates or one of Rooney's associates, was trying to engineer a move to Chelsea. If you didn't think that was the case, if you still don't think that's the case, then again, I don't think you're looking at it clearly. He obviously was. And if Ferguson's frustrated about that and he signed a book deal, he's not going to sign a book deal and write a book which is all lovely and fluffy. He's going to give some revelations that are, one, going to sell the book, and two, going to make people, you know, want to serialise that book. And if Wayne Rooney's a victim of that, then Wayne Rooney's a victim of that. I mean, at the end of the day, what's the worst that could happen? Someone could say that, you know, I didn't like the way he behaved, he did this, he did that, he did that. The fans might get upset with him for a couple of weeks. The fans booed him. In the last game of the season, when Sir Alex Ferguson was retiring, they booed him when he picked up his Premier League winner's medal. They booed him. And it hasn't had too much of a detrimental effect on his career thus far. I think he should just get on with it, like he has been so far this season, and he's been brilliant. He's been an excellent player for Manchester United and for England.
Always straight talking, Sam. Let's move away from Manchester United and quickly on a side being described as Arsenal owner. And it was a Barcelona-style goal from Jack Wilshere to set things off against Norwich on the weekend. Are you convinced that this side, some people can still pick out the frailties and the lack of depth, but do you think, Sam, that this is a title contender now? Arsenal have shown their hand and it's worthy of being put in contention for the Premier League this year?
No, I don't think they're title contenders, and you've already identified the reasons why, because they don't have the strength in depth and they're a little bit frail. And if they get an injury to Koscielny or Mertesacker, then they're going to be in trouble. And if Szczesny has a little wobble, again, the same thing's going to happen. I actually really like the way they're playing. I've enjoyed every game I've been to watching them. We're going next week to see them again. And it's just a pleasure to watch them every time, because they play good football, the games are entertaining. They're actually never sure they're actually going to come away with all 3 points. There's always a moment in the game. The opposition do have a spell and you think, oh, they could crumble here. But do you know what? Jack Wilshere scored with to the season so far without a shadow of a doubt. Actually, do you know what? There's a feel-good factor about Arsenal for the first time in a long time. Will it last? Probably not. Yeah, it doesn't usually. The likelihood is that over the course of the next 6 months, they'll be unfortunate and someone else will pit them to it. They'll be up there in the top four this season, and I think they've given their fans something that they desperately wanted. That's hope. Started the season without any, and now at least they've got some.
there's a real pop around the Emirates when they score, and part of that is obviously from the arrival of Mesut Ozil and the impact he's had on the team on and off the pitch. Does this kind of highlight, though, Sam, that maybe somebody at Arsenal or Arsene Wenger in that transfer policy has been wrong for all these years to not bring in that big signing? When you look back in reflection, do you think it's actually shows more faults with Arsenal, the fact that Ozil's come in and made such an impact?
Absolutely. And it will, again, identify more problems when Giroud gets injured and they haven't. There is a transfer issue at Arsenal. They broke that transfer policy and gone down the route of signing a big-name star. Listen, anyone would sign a big-name star if that big-name star is Mesut Ozil for that sort of money. Of course they would. You know, he's a fantastic player. He's got skill. He's got balance. And that's superb. And he adds sensitivity. But he's one player. It is just one player. They bought in Jarno Sanogo, who 2 years ago, and hasn't hit the ball hardly for 3 years. He's been injured and hasn't been seen. I don't know where he is. Is he still at the Gunners training complex, or is he back getting more free? I don't know. No one's seen him or heard him for 3 months. If Giroud gets injured, they've got a problem. They haven't brought in anybody else. And you know what? Although the money is fantastic that they've spent, finally they've gone out and said, you know, this is a real statement of intent. What worries you is, despite the good start, there's still a potential for it all to go wrong before or after Christmas. And that's a shame. But, you know, it's a much better campaign so far than it was this time last year. So the Arsenal fans will be... Will they win a trophy? Possibly capture one cup or the FA Cup, but they ain't going to win the league.
And just finally, Sam, before we let you go, Tottenham with that win against Aston Villa, and Andros Townsend is the next best thing in English football, apparently. For Andros, what can players learn from Andros? The fact he's been out on loan at so many different places, but has gone and got football playing time rather than being sat on a bench and trying to learn in training. Does it just highlight what young players should be doing and ensuring that they make moves to get out onto a football pitch playing competitive football?
I think it's absolutely brilliant advert for the loan system. He's been around the block. He's learned his trade in all four different divisions. He's played in good teams, bad teams. And Tottenham always managed to keep hold of him. Listen, I think that there's probably been times when people have offered him a permanent switch somewhere and he may not well have flourished as much. Different players develop at different times. He's more of a late bloomer than others, but he's done fantastically so far this season. Do you know what I like about him more than anything else? Is that he gambles. He's not the most gifted player in the world. He's got great skills and, you know, his dribbling ability is what really excites me, because you don't see players dribble anymore. Mm-hmm. He'll take a gamble. He'll get on the halfway line, he'll approach the fullback, he'll try a trick. He did it yesterday. He tried a trick, he went past the fullback or the midfielder who was high up the pitch, went past him, and then he tried to lay the ball off. He gave the ball away. But 10 minutes later, he did exactly the same thing again. He got away with it. You know, he tries his innovative little flicks. He makes the game look easier. He doesn't mind making a mistake, because he'll go back and he'll rectify it next time. He's hungry. He wants to learn. He's got a little bit lucky. He admits that himself over the last couple of weeks. And I think he's a real gem. He's a real fighter. He's definitely added so much to England in the two games against Montenegro and Poland. Absolutely brilliant.
Sam, who was the last England international that you can remember runs at defenders like that? Because I've been thinking back, and the last person I can remember doing that is Steve McManaman in Euro 96. Who's the last person that reminds you of Townsend and the way he's playing for England right now?
I must admit, it was so long since I've seen a player playing that style, so I can't put my finger on someone in particular playing for England doing that. I mean, McManaman did do that, yeah, but he was a player who was quite happy to cut in and run with the ball, but also, yeah, maybe it's the right comparison. I mean, looking further back, Steve Stone running at people, Gazza running at people, but if, you know, we haven't seen a player like this for a long time, which is great, you know, to be able to finally unearth someone who has those qualities. I'm delighted. I love attacking football, and, you know, like all of us, and he may not offer too much cover to his fullback, but he has so much going forward, which we should cherish. You know, we can't all be Frank Ribery and Iron Robin. You know, there's got to be something different about everyone, and he's got different qualities, and I truly believe that he's got the opportunity now to thrive.
Sam, we always enjoy getting your thoughts here on the Premier League footballers. We bounce back from the weekend, mate, and we really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us here on World Football Daily. We look forward to chatting with you soon, man. And let's hope it's not too long.
Cheers, Ollie. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Sam, mate. Thanks a lot. Sam Matterface there from TalkSport joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things English Premier League football. Apologies there for the line on a couple of occasions, slightly breaking up, but we could still get the gist of what Sam was saying. And of course, it's always great to hear what Mr. Matterface is saying when he joins us here on WFD. A big thanks as well, of course, to Kim Tate for joining us on World Football Daily just before Sam giving us a little wrap-up on El Tri and the managerial situation in Mexico. A man who's going to go through a bit of the Premier League action with me now is the man who always joins me on World Football Daily. Slightly shorter time on the mic than normal, but joining me as always is Raf, man. Raf, how are you doing today? It was a pretty crazy weekend of football in general, wasn't it, man?
Bored. And to be honest, I'm a little bit, you know, kind of offended, sir. How dare you?
How dare I what?
Well, I mean, just you bring me on to talk about European. I'm an American, sir.
Yada yada.
I can talk about Major League Soccer.
Look, Major League Soccer, but we need to bask in the glory of a few things that took place this weekend. Because in case you missed it, Monaco blew a 2-0 lead against bottom of the league Sochaux. Fiorentina came back from 2-0 down against the old lady Juventus to thump them 4-2 as Juve just fell apart at the seams. And Giancarlo Rinaldi was celebrating on Twitter with putting up pictures of the red wine that he was going to be drinking that night. We had Zlatan Ibrahimovic score with a heel flick, like ninja style, bringing his foot round his head almost in a scorpion style.
Edson
Cavani then goes up the other end in the second half, beats four defenders in the penalty box, rolls the ball around the keeper, and then from the narrowest angle still beats two defenders on the line and slots it away in their 4-0 win against Bastia on the weekend. We had Milan beating Udinese, but only just, as Balotelli watched from the stands. We had Messi being unimpressive, Barca drawing, Atletico Madrid losing for the first time to Espanyol, Bale wins a penalty for Real as they go through. And then we had, as we were talking with Sam, United draw with Southampton, City, Chelsea, Arsenal all get the job done in big ways. Mourinho sent from the stands and suddenly the fire's back in Jose after, the happy one, I'm so happy and calm. And no, we saw Jose in the stands fist pumping, shouting away. I mean, we had everything. And to top it all off, Jack Wilshere's goal as well. And it bleeds my heart to say this. It pains me to say it. But that was incredible. I mean, somebody at work was showing it me kind of videos of it and stuff. And, and I was generally just kind of going, oh, yeah, whatever. Oh, it's lucky though, isn't it? You know, so if anything, that's a bad ball from Giroud. He's played it behind Wilshere. And Wilshere's just panicked and put a foot out and flicked it. And it's just lucky, isn't it? And I was winding him up so much about that. Raf, I was unfortunate enough to watch almost none of this football live, unfortunately, because I was working most of the weekend on. By the way, you want problems with flares? You should go to Panathinaikos. I was covering the Panathinaikos game this weekend. They got beaten 2-1 in a pretty thrilling game. But the fans there don't take crap from nobody. I mean, chucking like water and cups and stuff at the Panthrakikos players and stuff. You know, 50 or so flares in the ground before half time. I mean, let's talk about this flares thing, actually, because, you know, we had the Poland fans at Wembley were showing off with all the flares that they got into Wembley for the World Cup qualifier last week. And then we, of course, had a couple of incidents in the last few weeks and one this weekend of a referee's assistant being hit by a smoke flare, if you will, by the Tottenham fans at Villa Park. And when Poland fans did it at Wembley, Martin Keown on the BBC, ex-Arsenal defender, of course, said, yeah, it does add something. You know, it is a safety hazard, but, you know, when you're playing in front of fans like that, it does add something. It does make it extremely special.
It juices you up, man. You got to be like, you got to be charged as a player to be in an atmosphere like that.
But then,
it's like playing for your life.
But I mean, then Keown is there at Villa Park on Sunday. And the thing happens, he's like, oh, well, we shouldn't see these flares and stuff inside football grounds. It's like, wait a second. Go back a week, less than a week. And you were saying, well, it's a safety hazard, but it's great. And now suddenly, look, I don't in no way support. And it's a shame that fans ruin it for people because they can't, you know, dispose of them in a safe, normal way as opposed to just chucking them at officials and chucking them on the pitch. You know, in the grounds around Europe, you generally have a much bigger gap between the terraces and the pitch, you know, especially in like places like the Olympico in Rome. You know, there's a big running track and stuff, so flares get thrown onto that, nowhere near the pitch. Of course, we all remember the firewall scenes of the Milan Inter AC derby in the Champions League, that when Dida got hit by a flare and the Inter fans were just launching flares all over the pitch, which was just ridiculous. But, I mean, in general, like, isn't there a big part of all of us that kind of thinks, it's such a shame that you people ruin it for us, because I kind of really, really like this. Like, when they're there in the stands, I mean, wouldn't you love to be in with a group of fans with the flares and stuff? Wouldn't it just be...
Oh, absolutely. I love that, man. I mean, smell of sulfur. I mean, it just, there's so much about, like, and I'm sorry, because it is. It's probably really uncivilized. But there's just that kind of basic instinct connection to the human psyche when you go to a big match like these. Or just any football match, you know, like that for a well-supported club, for a good club, for entertaining football. That when you add this, it just really kind of ramps it up. There are times when, you know, you can try, you bust out the flare, and it's not the right. It's like sometimes at a very, very dead Chivas USA game, when you go and there's like the band playing just like the whatever kind of music or rhythmic, you know, kind of sounds. It's like, okay, I know you're trying to bring in that atmosphere, but it's just not there. It's, you know, it's not bringing anything to it. Like, if you were to bust out a flare in that situation, wouldn't you just kind of look at that guy and be like, really? Really?
Like,
in front of like 5,000 people? Like, really?
Are you trying that hard to be like that intense? Yeah.
How intense?
You would feel really awkward if you're the one guy and then everybody starts separating away from you. So there's like a circle of people around you just holding a flare, like trying to go nuts on your own. You know, if you went with like a group of 30 of you all together, then it would work and you're all like planned it and stuff. But if there's a group of like one or two of you and you guys are like, yeah, and everybody else around you is like, nah.
Yeah, I'm completely with you, Juice. I would love to be at a game, you know, go to Europe, practically any top level league game, you know, a Champions League game even, with just flares, any, you know, all the atmosphere that it brings, the way that the flare just kind of, you know, sets it off. It's like the igniter, right? Like, you just can't help but just let go and just be part of the crowd. Lose your individual mentality. Join the riot and really get behind your club. Choose sides. Become tribalistic. And, lose yourself, really.
Now, Raf, we've got a huge week of Champions League football coming up. I know, unfortunately, with Sam's tight schedule and how much we wanted to talk to him today, we were unable to go through the English Champions League side's ties coming up. Of course, Arsenal take on Borussia Dortmund coming up this week on Tuesday. Chelsea take on Schalke away from home. It's the German trips for the English sides. City take on CSKA Moscow on Wednesday. And on Wednesday as well, Manchester United take on Real Sociedad. But another side of Manchester United's group, Bayer Leverkusen as well. Another story coming out the weekend. Did you see this on Friday night in the Bundesliga? What happened with Bayer Leverkusen?
Stefan Kiebling with the ghost goal. Oh,
I mean... Hoffenheim are demanding a replay of the game here because they feel so cheated by this, because Sidney Sam gave Leverkusen the initial lead in that game in the first half. Kiebling, after 70 minutes, heads the ball into the side netting, but there's a hole in the net. It goes through the hole in the net. The referee awards the goal.
How that happens, yeah.
I mean, it was all over the news on Friday night, even in the UK, kind of, you know.
I remember. I remember reading about it, and then I remember hearing that the goal scorer himself, like, knew that it, you know, it didn't go in. And he kind of, like, you know,
awkward celebration time.
Yeah, he reacts kind of so. But enough of his players and enough of the other team's players react that it is a goal that the, you know, and it is, you know, essentially in the back of the net. It rests in the back left corner of the net. The referee calls it a goal. And, I mean, wow. To not feel cheated, to not be affected by that as a team, to not be completely demoralized. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what team doesn't have the or has that mental strength to give up a goal like that. I just can't understand.
I mean, it unbelievable. And Hoffenheim rightfully feeling aggrieved because they did obviously get a goal towards the end of that game. Whether that goal would have taken place or not is a different question. Had Keebling, you know, obviously with the game stopping, and as soon as that happens, it's a completely different game that you're playing, etc., etc. But Sven Shiplock did score 88 minutes into the game. And, you know, that's a point for Hoffenheim against a strong Bayer Leverkusen side. Instead, they only faced 2-1. I mean, do you... If you're official, obviously we're talking about kind of the governing bodies in England, maybe not knowing the rules and all this kind of stuff when it comes to Sammy Eto'o's goal. But if you're Hoffenheim, do you genuinely think there's a chance that you're going to get a replay out of this, or do you think it's going to have to be unfortunately kind of washed under?
Well,
the
it is German football, man. I'm going to, and what I mean by that is that they're generally a pretty forward thinking. Governing body
cut above, really, aren't they?
Yeah,
they know this.
I think they are just generally a step ahead. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. It's not necessarily a step ahead. I'm gonna say they're. I don't know. I want to say that they're a little bit more forward thinking, and up for equal rights and all that stuff. So I'm going to say yes, they are going to get a replay of this match, and I think they deserve it.
I just don't see them pulling out a full replay for it, but we will see. I've got to give a big shout, by the way, to Spooner Tuna from our World Football Daily IKTS League. whoever it is, they have 400 total points or so, but this
what?
Week picking up 225 points.
Wow.
In I know the score.
I believe that's in deserving of a unless he has a massive like fail tonight against Fulham and
if he fails, he loses 10. I mean, that's nothing. 205 points he got this week. He's got more points than anybody else this week in IKTS. Pretty impressive.
I think I'll send him out a Puma ball then.
I got
Spoon
it.
Tuna. Hey Spoon Tuna, when you hear this, just email Rafa@worldfootballdaily.com. Send me your mailing address, or you know, give me your real name or whatever. And I'll look it up, and I'll try to find, confirm your mailing address, and we'll send you out a Puma ball. I got a nice special breast cancer awareness ball for you, buddy.
Oh, sweet, very nice and pink.
Nice and pink.
Oh, badass! You lucky, yep. Lucky bugger. Lucky, you lucky bugger. You, Raf, you only picked up 115 so far this week.
Hey, that's not bad.
I know you're still storming away with it. You're over 200. You're over 200 points ahead. You're like you're done for the season now. It's...
I know.
And I've had a shock.
I'm really proud of like the general results. You know, I guess a lot of the results correct. I'm surprised. I'm surprised that you know United couldn't come away with a victory on
not at all. Not at all. As Sam said, there's plenty of problems in that United side, and one big problem is that they're just not good enough. Those players.
I get it.
Last year's United side was the worst United side to win a Premier League, and it was only because other people around them stumbled that they won it, really. Mm-hmm. You know, City should have dominated that last year with the squad that they had. They should have wiped the floor with United. And, I think we're just seeing everybody else has kind of kicked themselves into gear a bit. United have, you know, stalled slightly, obviously with Moyes being in there, and because it's just not a great side. It looks lost in the heart of the midfield. Fair play as well, though, to Pochettino. I mean, that Saints side is playing some excellent football. They never gave up, and they really took to the game to United at points on the weekend. Very impressed by that. I was very impressed, of course, by Sturridge and Suarez. Once again, Sturridge getting on the score sheet. Those two look great. Unfortunately, the rest of that Liverpool team around them is just playing at like half a pace behind them. You know,
Sorry. Well, that was a 2-2 draw. Oh, yes.
2-2.
That's right.
Yeah.
I guess that's completely correct.
All right.
Stings a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Just a little bit.
Cuts deep. Real
hey,
deep.
Real quick, on Friday, did you happen to catch the Roma-Napoli match?
I did not, I'm afraid. No,
that's okay.
I had a last-minute call.
Obviously, Roma beat Napoli 2-0. Do you think Napoli were potentially looking ahead too far to their matchup against Marseille? I mean...
Getting distracted by the Champions League, kind of. It's something that Benitez used to do at Liverpool, didn't he? He used to kind of look at the Champions League quite a lot in the midweek. But I think because they were playing on the Friday, I don't see it as an excuse. Because they're playing on the Friday, you know, they've got that extra day, if you will, to kind of get themselves sorted and settled, ready for the Tuesday game, unless they're in the same way that if they'd been playing on the Saturday. So I do think that there was no excuse, really. I think we've just seen Roma show that they... with a fully fit squad, they are a side to be reckoned with by the top sides in Serie A. I mean, a crazy weekend of football, Raf. There unfortunately isn't enough time in the day, in our lives in general, to go through everything that's happened this weekend. But we will try and cover as much of it this week and also build up to next week. And we've got the Champions League news come in, by the way. The World Cup playoff draw was today, about 45 minutes ago or so. And I'm sure glad that England got through, because if they hadn't, Ukraine drawing France, England would have been playing France in the World Cup playoff. Greece have been drawn against Romania. Iceland have been given a half chance by being drawn against Croatia. But the pick of the ties in the UEFA World Cup playoffs, Portugal, Sweden. I mean, there is going to be either Zlatan or Cristiano Ronaldo missing from the World Cup. It's a shame that that's going to happen. It is a shame to see one of those.
Put your money on it right now. What do you get between there?
Who goes through? I go Sweden.
I'm going Spain. Or I mean, I'm going Spain.
You go Spain. Raf, I guess you win.
I'm going Portugal for sure. Sticking on that Iberian Peninsula. I'm going Portugal. I think Ronaldo steps up to the plate big time.
You don't think Zlatan can step up to the plate? The guy scored a ninja kick.
I'm not saying he can't. I just think that there's a little bit more talent behind Portugal and a little more it's skill in the big man Ronaldo.
Best goal of the weekend, Raf, just quickly before we head off.
I don't know, man. I give it to Zlatan just because, you know, my martial arts background. Like you said, I took martial arts for 10 years. I think
is that how you scored this weekend? Did you do a Zlatan flick like that?
Yeah, well, actually, my goal this weekend was a sliding right footed ball up over the goal. It was wicked, dude. Like, basically, you know, the play was coming from the left side. I'm running down the right. Kind of trying to ghost in between, in behind this defender. The ball's coming from the right. You know, the goalkeeper's looking on the, the ball's coming down on the left. The goalkeeper's looking to that side. The play gets switched over to the right in like a kind of a cross, you know, across the goal. The goalkeeper's like running over towards me to meet it. And, you know, I just kind of clip it over in a sliding kind of, almost like a slide tackle. And I clip it, chip it over the keeper just barely. Up and into the net, so sexy. I kind of rolled after that, and I got up, and I was like, "Oh!" You know, I was really dusting myself off and everything. I was super stoked. Final goal of the game. My team still ended up losing, but it was such a sick goal for real. I was very excited about it.
And congratulations to you, man! Congratulations. I mean, you know,
I think I was at like 4,800 field points yesterday, Juice. I don't know if you're even, you know.
Oh, I don't really
earning any fuel points these days.
Unfortunately, I don't really do it on the weekends. Like, I generally have taken my band off because I've been like this weekend, man. I've covered like 4 games this weekend, so that means I've been driving a lot and stuff. So I haven't had a chance to go to the gym or anything like that, which is the same. So it's I do Monday to Friday is my fuel points days. Saturday and Sunday is work and relaxation, my man. That's what the weekends are there for.
Do me a favor, Juicy. Do me a favor. On the next, like, you know, football game that you commentate on, you know, I would really enjoy it if you put your fuel band on and just see what kind of, like, you know, points you earn. You know, break it down by half first off. You
know, tell me how many points you have.
So, I mean, maybe that's a problem there, Juice. Maybe you need to kind of ramp up your commentary so that you get, you know, 15, 20 points.
I tell you what,
when
I go to the Hawthorns, because we're up in like the gantry rather than in seats anywhere, the stands or anything like that. So there's nobody behind you. So when we're at the Hawthorns, I do the commentary stood up, and because we have headsets rather than holding the microphone kind of thing, we're able to like use our, you know, when you're stood up having a conversation, you kind of use your hands a bit more and you're a little bit more expressive. And I find the commentary actually is so much better when the guys are stood up. I can see why the NFL guys do it all the time and stuff from in their booths, you know, stood up for 3 hours commentating. But it works so much better. You get a much better dialogue. And I think actually on those games, especially if it's a decent game, you know, I think I would be able to rack up maybe 30 points a half, something like that, with the hand movements and some gestures. And, you know, if West Brom score, kind of running up and down the gantry or something like that, you know. I mean, I reckon I could.
Telling you, but I would love to see you kind of raise that level of commentary for you, Juice. That's all I'm saying. I'm trying to better you.
A few more fist pumps as well in there, I think, is what's needed. Yep. That'll help help rack up the score, I think, on that. It's the only way I'm going to be able to compete with you on the weekends, man. Because you have to run after a small child, which is knackering enough as it is, let alone. Like...
I know. Well, see, my weekdays is where I really kind of lack. And the main reason why I wear it on the weekdays is so I can kind of say, fuck, Raph, you need to get your ass in gear, man. Like, you've been sitting at your desk way too long. Go for a walk around the building or something. Because it gets really depressing there. On the weekends, dude, I kill it on the weekends. And it is, you know, primarily because I'm following a 1.5-year-old running up and down my street, man.
Are you doing it up and down the street these days?
Juice.
Are you doing it on the American fuel points or the English fuel points? Because of the, you know.
Oh, please.
The exchange rate on that. There's got to be an exchange rate, right? Like one American fuel point is worth like 0.5 American British fuel points.
Good times. Whatever you want to say. Yeah, sure. It's like 0.5 tougher over here in the UK.
There's two fuel points to the UK fuel point, right? There's two US fuel points for every UK.
It's because it's so thick over there, man.
Yeah, because we've got the weather and the rain and stuff. You know, it holds us back and holds us down. You know, it's just keeping us down. That's exactly what it is. No, we need to get off and out of it, man. Because I know you've probably got a small child running up and down the street again that you need to get your attention onto. Exactly. So we will leave it there for today on World Football Daily. We've got the Champions League coming up this week. Always love a little bit of Champions League football in the midweek. It feels like the international break was suddenly a year away. That was a weekend and a half of football. I can't wait to get into it. We're going to be talking Italian. We're going to have to talk a little bit of French and a little bit of German as well this week. We're going to be all over the shop, hopefully. We've given you Mexico and England today. There's so much more to talk about from England, but we'll have to leave it for another day and another time. Champions League coming up tomorrow and Wednesday. Europa League on Thursday. Friday, the start of the Europeans League fixtures, and Saturday and Sunday brings it all back around once again. This has been Monday's edition of World Football Daily. A big thanks to Kim Tate and Sam Matterface for joining us on the show, and we will be back tomorrow at the same time. Take care, have a cracking day, and enjoy the football. And remember, show up worldfootballdaily.com. Give us a shout.